One, two, three. This is Dr. Alex Avila, and we're back with Love University. I'm an author, psychologist, and speaker. And every week we talk about love, relationships, and self-empowerment. And this week I'm going to reverse the tables. I'm going to be interviewed by a very successful relationship expert, Dr. Diana Wiley. And Dr. Diana is going to get into what we're going to do with guy types and love and relationships. So let's hear what happened.
So, Alex, how did it come about? I know there's a Myers-Briggs background. But
yes, basically, I was in an incompatible relationship. This is like in the late 90s. And I realized that there's more to compatibility than just surface appearance and personality. So I started to do research and into the personality types, Jungian types, Myers-Briggs, and I wrote the book called Love Types. Love Types came out in the late 90s. It was a bestseller, and basically helped people identify the 16 unique personality types and then help people identify the right one. And it was very successful. I've traveled the world. It's used in the number one dating site in China. But recently I thought, a lot of time has passed since the late 90s and early 2000s. We're now in the internet age and a lot of things have changed. So I decided to update Love Types and also kind of simplify it in some ways by creating guy types. So with guy types, there are four unique temperament or personality groups that women can identify as their ideal man. Or if you're a guy, you can also identify yourself. And these are, for example, the meaning seekers, the excitement seekers, the security seekers, and the knowledge seekers. And they're very unique individuals, these four groups of people.
Yes. And you say they have the meaning seeker has at least two of the Myers-Briggs types, so the intuitive, or N, and F for feeling. I wanted to just give our listeners a little bit of an overview about sensing or intuitive, just very briefly, because I think some of our listeners are familiar with Myers-Briggs. It's been around since the late 40s, so it's a very validated test.
Yes,
used
definitely.
A lot.
Definitely. Well, the intuitive or the N personality is someone that is imaginative, that likes, let's say, psychology, philosophy, spirituality, and the arts, and they look at life in a kind of holistic way, always trying to find meaning, putting things together. And the sensory person, or the S, is known as the practical person. There are persons who are more realistic, practical, and concrete. They like to say the phrase is, if I see it, I believe it. They process things through their senses, and they tend to be more down-to-earth and practical in a certain way. So in the issue here is that sometimes if you're an imaginative person and you're with a practical person or vice versa, you can have some problems in a relationship or issues if you don't respect each other's styles. Because a practical person can think the imaginative person is, your head is in the clouds, you're talking about philosophy and esoteric wisdom, and then the other person will say, well, you're a stick in the mud, you're just, worried about paying bills and practical things. So this is an important dimension in personality. In fact, research shows that 70% of happily married couples are the same or similar, either both imaginative ends or both more practical S's. So that's an important aspect of this personality type theory. And the meaning seekers, we just talked about, are intuitive, they're imaginative, and also they're feeling, they're emotional. So these are our healers, our teachers, our psychologists, pastors, and artists. So it is interesting how it combines, and basically, based on that, you can determine compatibility in a long-term relationship. And also even how to make it better. Let's say you're married to someone who's a little bit different, how to really appreciate their style once you understand the guy type system.
Yes, I want to say that in general, sensing types are most at home in the world of what is, so they prefer facts and observations.
Yes.
And intuitive types prefer the world of what if.
Yes.
With its hunches, conjectures, and infinite possibilities.
I like that. That's well said.
And then because you use the sensing or intuitive, and you use the thinking or feeling, and thinking types make decisions based on logic and principle.
Yes.
And feeling types base their decisions on emotions and values. Isn't that a
yes.
pretty good overview summary?
Yeah, you did well. you must have learned this over the years. The Myers-Briggs, yeah.
But it's my practice, the Myers-Briggs.
Yes, definitely. But yeah, but basically the feeler, and two-thirds of females are feelers and two-thirds of males are thinkers. So these are people that, feelers are those that make decisions by their values and the impact something will have on a relationship. A feeler may, say to a person, you look great today, even though, maybe there's something about their shirt that doesn't look good. A thinker might say, that shirt makes you look a little bit overweight, can you change it? Now, they don't say that to be mean. They're just trying to cut through the BS of things, kind of look at the logical side. And many times in relationships, you might have a thinker with a feeler, And sometimes it's the male. They're actually 1/3 of males are feelers, called sensitive male. And then some females are thinkers. They're very logical and straightforward. So this can pose issues sometimes if they don't respect each other's style. And then when you combine it with the other letter, for example, the NT, or the intuitive thinker, is the person who's kind of like a very logical, scientific person, analytical. Often you see them as engineers, scientists, entrepreneurs, people that are very incisive, very witty, very intelligent. And they like to, they value knowledge. That's their key. They're knowledge seekers. And that's a little bit different kind of personality group, the knowledge seeker personality. It actually is one of the rarer types as well.
The knowledge seeker, the N and the T.
Yes, that's that combination.
So, you know what I think is interesting, if we think Albert Einstein, he was
yes.
an N.
Definitely.
Think of him alone in his study, absorbed in his theory, and
yes.
relatively unaware of his surroundings. And,
yes.
And this is a picture of the intuition function. People who prefer intuition are primarily interested in possibilities. Einstein certainly
yes.
was, and were capable of sustained attention to Hunch's theories and inspiration.
Well, definitely. Even currently today, Elon Musk, you know, who created the Tesla and other things, you know, these kind of people, Steven Jobs, you know, these kind of intuitive thinkers are very, visionaries, sometimes extremely intelligent. But they can also be sometimes challenging in relationships because they may be oblivious to certain details of relationships. Some of these geniuses, you know, they spend all their time working on their inventions and then maybe neglect your relationships because of that. So that they need to be brought a little bit down to earth sometimes by, you know, their partner or someone else to, you know, help them understand that. But they can be amazing people. They're very brilliant, the NTs, or the so-called knowledge seekers.
Mm-hmm, the knowledge seekers.
Yes.
So they're, in using their intuition, they're more interested in what could be.
Yes.
They can be completely involved in their own projects, enterprises, and so on, don't they?
Yes, and they can be lost in their own world, and that's a little bit of a danger for the intuitives in general. You know, they could be thinking of a great idea, and they, you know, they get into a car accident or they lose something, you know, they misplace something because they're not focused on the realities. So sometimes it's good to have a partner that's a little more realistically focused and say, hey, let's pay those bills before, you know, our car gets repossessed, you know, because I know you're working on this great idea. So that could be a good complimentary thing if they respect each other. And the other thing is, as a tip for females, there are 3 times more male NTs or knowledge seekers than female knowledge seekers. There's a 3-to-1 ratio. So you actually have an advantage. If you're a female knowledge seeker, you have a good advantage in the dating pool to find the right guy. If you put yourself out there in those activities and events that relate to knowledge seekers.
So we're talking about a lot of things that stem from the Myers-Briggs.
Yes.
And I mentioned Albert Einstein.
Yes.
Who was an intuitive, but I think Sherlock Holmes is a really good example of the more sensational type.
Yes.
You know, he was hot on a case, he had the magnifying glass in hand,
yeah.
He was searching the scene of a crime for clues, and this is the picture of a sensation function at its height.
Yes, definitely.
People who prefer sensation are primarily interested in the accurate perception of reality.
Yes. Definitely, yeah. The sensing individuals, you know, they're in tune to the smells, the taste, the sounds. And, you know, they like a very nice aesthetic environment. Someone who's a sensory person likes places very clean and organized and detailed, you know, in terms of their decoration in the house. So they might be turned off by smells and loud noises and messiness. So the other types may not really get that worried about it, but they are really in tune to that. So that's something that sensory people like. They like the, you know, the kind of the aesthetic parts of things.
Yeah, they prefer to operate slowly and thoroughly. Maybe,
yes.
You know, think an engineer who's carefully scrutinizing a bridge to make sure it will bear the weight safely. That would be a sensation type.
Yes. And in relationships, again, you know, the key is to respect the other person's style. That's what we talk about in guy types, is that maybe you are an intuitive feeler, and maybe you're dating someone who's what we call a sensing judger, someone who's a more traditional person, security seeker, detail-oriented. Sometimes that can work out. Ideally, you want someone within your own group. So if you're an intuitive feeler, a meaning seeker, you want to, you know, date or marry someone that's similar. But sometimes you find yourself with a person who's a little bit different. And, you know, you need to learn how to respect that person's personality. Maybe you can value the sensory style. You know, they're attuned to details. You know, they know that you need to pay your bills and you need to check your gas and things like that. And they can keep you attuned to the details of things if you're an intuitive person that's in your mindset.
So at this point, I want to say to our listeners that if you go to Dr. Alex's website, guidetypes.com, you'll see something about his book there.
Yes.
People can get your book there or at Amazon.
Yes.
Yeah,
Amazon.com and also GuideTypes, they can see the book. And I also have a podcast, Love University, on iTunes that we often talk about the same issues, and you know, people can also get in tune to that as well. So there are many things that we can offer listeners, you know, to help them, you know, basically have great relationships, loving yourself and loving others. That's our key in terms of what we're doing.
Really true. Very important to love yourself first.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's harder to love somebody else, really.
Yeah, that's why the guide types is so powerful, because many times you might be a unique personality and you may not even embrace yourself as much. Maybe you are the scientist type or you're the psychology type, and you know, you don't really fit in with a lot of people. So it takes a while for you to embrace your personality, and then eventually you can attract the right partner based on that. So loving yourself, embracing your true nature, your true guide type or love type is the key first, and then everything else can come from that.
I was thinking about how my husband and I are both feeling types.
Yes.
And I think one reason we're so compatible is that for us, this is a real source of shared values. And we both put a high premium on personal feelings and human values. And neither of us, well, no, that's not entirely true. Brian is more logical. I think he moves into the thinking. He's probably between the two.
Yes.
That's possible, I guess.
Yeah, it could be a borderline that we'll call between thinking and feeling. That's a possibility.
Yeah.
Have a blend there.
Yes, I'm not logical, but he is.
Yes.
So, but we both have strong emotional reactions to people and places and things, and neither of us feels much of a need to be consistent. Maybe Brian a little more than me, but and that's one reason he's such a good partner, of course.
Uh-huh.
But we rarely argue about principles. We're both in the habit of going along with what feels right, I think. And once the feelings of the people involved, like the two of us, are clear, the best decision is usually self-evident. And I think that's one reason why we're such good communicators.
Yeah, because you're in tune to each other's feelings, like you said, the values. And you, you know, you can also be empathetic. And that's a very valuable trait, to put yourself in the shoes of another, and, you know, compassion. So those are things that feelers have to a high level. They can empathize with their partner, and that makes you know, relationships a lot better, because instead of having conflicts, you know, because many times people think, you know, my way is the best way, and they get into some fights. But the feeling person can actually look at both sides. They can kind of feel their partner's pain or happiness or whatever it is, and the partner can do the same for them. So they're many times can be on the same page. The only issue is when they can feel a little hurt at times. Sometimes, you know, one partner may say something unintentionally that may hurt the other person because they're a feeler. So they need to really communicate and get that out and not let it resentfully linger. Because feelers operate a lot on the emotions, you know, on their heart. And that can really hurt them if they don't talk about something that you know, that is damaging emotionally to them.
So they have to be careful not to have resentment.
Yeah, definitely. I can build a little bit. You know, I mean, it could be an innocent comment, but sometimes the feeler takes it personally. And then, you know, the other part, the thinkers often say, why do you take things personally, to the feeler? And the feeler says, well, because I'm a that's who I am. I'm a person that's very deeply feeling. And the good part of that is, you know, you might have more intense joy and happiness and pleasure, but sometimes there is that irritation or anger or, you know, maybe feelings of hurt that a feeling person may have if they're not mature and they haven't worked through that. But sometimes, you know, as an older person, a mature person, you start to understand your own feelings, and that there are times when you need to separate yourself from that and say, wait a minute, is this really something, is this real? Is this person really trying to hurt me, or am I taking this the wrong way? So the mature feeler is different from the immature feeler.
That's such a point. And that's why I think a lot of relationships get better as people mature and are more individuated and... Yeah, or differentiated, if we use David Snarch's idea, that they know who they are, they can stand on their own two feet, they're more mature, and they don't feel like they have to be merged, joined at the hip.
Yeah, that's true, and that you know, they don't have to take everything as a personal, sometimes a personal slight, or something that attacks their ego, because they've already developed a good sense of self-confidence and ego that's apart from their partner. And they say, you know, I'm a valuable person. I'm a person of worth, and so is my partner. So we can interact on that basis. You know, we're both equal people of worth and value. And therefore, you know, we can work it out and have more, you know, patience is another factor. Many times people are impatient when they're a little bit younger. They want, you know, things now, and, you know, things aren't working out properly. They get sometimes very anxious about it. But with you know, maturity, people can say, you know, I've seen many things in life. I see that everything changes and things transform. So I will be patient. Maybe it's not working out right now, but it will in the near future, a certain issue. So that's another factor as well, you know, developing that patience that comes through time.
Yeah, developing patience, that's a real one advantage to growing older. I think you do
yes.
develop patience. I want to back up a little bit because I remembered a lecture I heard on a guy was being interviewed who's the author, and I don't remember the author's name, but the power paradox. And his point was that people who grow up in privilege and then ultimately develop a lot of power, think Trump, that their brains actually develop differently, that they don't have the same empathy that other people have. That empathy part of their brain is just not developed.
Hmm.
And they're used to getting their own way and mm-hmm. being entitled and all of that.
That's interesting. Yeah, I have a role play exercise I give to people is that, you know, you have two people. One of you is going to play a rich person. The other person is going to play a homeless person who has been beaten and left on the street. And then each one plays out that role. And the rich person may say, you know, you're a bum. Go get a job and make some money. And then I have them reverse the roles. And now the rich person is playing the homeless person that's beaten. And the other person is playing the rich person. And see what happens now. Does a formerly rich person now, is he still arrogant? Or is he more humbled? Or is the other person thinks it's a time for revenge? Or does he feel compassion and empathy for the other person because now he sees their point of view? So I think these kind of role plays are interesting. You know, can people switch roles and develop this idea of empathy is reversing yourself into another mind, into another soul, and having that compassion. So whether it can be taught or whether it's learned, it will be interesting. That's an interesting idea.
Do you have these role plays then in the workshops you do?
Yes, we do them in the workshops. You know, when we play, for example, the different personality types, the introvert and the extrovert, we have the introvert sometimes be very outgoing and extrovert and vice versa. Extrovert can, you know, calm down and be very quiet. And basically, it's like you've heard of the Jungian integration of a personality. We have our shadow side and we have the other side. So, you know, to be able to play both sides. And sometimes you can be introvert, sometimes extrovert. Sometimes you can be a certain style. And then what's it like being the other style?
You know, I think that can help produce empathy. I know that Carl Jung believes that we all have a powerful drive. And it may occur, particularly in later life, to develop the less preferred side
yes.
of our natures. They're also called the shadow side, and you alluded to that.
Yes.
So that intuitives need to learn the joys of the real world,
mm-hmm.
and sensing types must learn to daydream.
Definitely.
And then judging types must learn to lollygag.
Right. The structured personalities. Right.
Yeah, and then sensation types need to plan. Mm-hmm. Extroverts need to value food.
Yes.
Now, I'm an extrovert, but I know yes. as I say, mm-hmm. I really do value time alone much mm-hmm. more.
Ah, interesting.
And, yeah, I appreciate it. But introverts must discover the joys of society, and thinking mm-hmm. types need to feel. Feeling types need to embrace logic and principle.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, as I recall, Jung believed that it is only by developing all the parts of our psyche that mm-hmm. we can become fully integrated. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, usually said by the middle years, 40 plus, people can start to develop the other side. Maybe if you're more introverted, you can be a little more extroverted and vice versa. And mm-hmm. I'm personally an introverted energy person, and I enjoy that. But I noticed that when I go out socially, I can really interact with a lot of people. I can be very outgoing. And it can be fun for a certain period of time, but then I get kind of tired. I need to recharge my batteries. But then when I go back to be an introvert, that was kind of cool. You know, I was able to get out of my shell a little bit, and now I can go back and work and do well as a writer and other things I do introvert-wise. So I think introversion can be a gift. And in fact, I wrote a book called The Gift of Shyness years ago. But unfortunately, it didn't do that well in the bookstore. People, I guess, were too shy to buy it. So at the time. That was before the internet, so the internet wasn't around too much then. But now, as you know, there's like a big trend of the power of introversion. There's a best-selling book that came out that talks about an introvert society and how it can be a positive thing. So I really talked about that years back. And I think there is a lot of introversion today with our technology. People are becoming more introvert. You know, they're staying home more on their tablets, their internet, and things like that.
Yeah. Are you referring to the book Quiet by Susan
Cain? Yes, definitely. The book Quiet. That's, you know, I talked about the introvert revolution back around the time I met you, like in the early 2000s. And yeah. And she's taking it to a different level. So that's kind of an interesting idea, is that we're moving into that introvert society.
Well, I know she claims that more of us should be introverted because we're then more introverted people tend to be better listeners. They can actually be better managers.
Yeah, there's some gifts to that, yeah.
Delegate, and they listen well to what ideas of others.
Yeah, and yeah, the shyness is a little different. Shyness has to do with sensitivity to others and self-reflection, so a little bit of self-consciousness, which can be damaging at times when you think that everyone's staring at you and criticizing you. But in the same way, the shy person can be also very sensitive to other sensitive. They can be the, good listeners and things like that. So there's definitely a value to having this style. But, I mean, extroversion also, there's a value to that too. So I think we can learn from both styles.
Yes, but it's helpful to identify what your partner is or a partner that you might be looking for, to identify that so that you can see where the strengths are in terms of a relationship and where the weaknesses are and how you might integrate better.
Yeah, definitely. I think introverts, the one advantage nowadays is with internet, introverts have a better chance in dating. It used to be you had to go up to nightclubs or parties or bars, and now you can stay home with your application and all that and be able to meet people. So, that, I mean, it's in some ways an introvert advantage, the whole internet dating kind of idea. And for extroverts, you know, they can do that, but they can also network and go out socially as well. And in the guy types, I talk about the new idea of what's called personality networking. So networking based on personality type. In other words, joining groups, whether online or offline, that cater to the personality type you're looking for, which is often your type. For example, knowledge seekers might get involved in technology clubs, maybe things related to comic books and, you know, fine wine, things like that. The meaning seekers may get involved with groups related to psychology, philosophy, spirituality, and the arts. And the other two groups we haven't talked about, security seekers. These are people that are practical and structured, sensing, judging. And they like things related to family, tradition. Country, patriotism, so political organizations, things related to family, neighborhood watch groups. And then we have the excitement seekers, the people who are sensory perceptive, which is practical and spontaneous. They people like, you know, bungee jumping and river rafting clubs, maybe comedy clubs, acting classes, so things like that. So also, each of the four groups have certain preferences in their activities and the things they enjoy. So if you want to meet someone in that group, you can get involved in certain kind of activities, online or offline.
So what I'm wondering, I mostly see couples, but occasionally I have individuals, and they may be single and looking, and some of them are quite introverted, and so they spend a lot of time after they've met somebody, not in person, just somebody online, texting, and they take forever to meet in person, and I think that that's a mistake. What do you think? I mean, just to be texting forever because that's more comfortable rather than meeting in person.
Right. That's taking the virtual online world into the real world. And that is maybe more of a sensory thing, you know, because an intuitive person may, in their whole imagination, think they have a relationship when they really don't really have much of a relationship because it's based on texting and, you know, kind of like your own image. But it is important to, you know, get out there and meet the person, you know, spend time with them in real world situations. Maybe, you know, see, do they have a temper? Are they patient or impatient? Are they compassionate or are they self-focused? You know, all these different aspects of a personality. And I've actually been doing research on a new concept, which I call Love Q or Love IQ, that deals with some of the spiritual elements of personality, which we haven't really seen much of. You know, things like gratitude, compassion, and patience. You know, these are elements that can also help predict what kind of mate would go well with you, which often people don't talk about as much.
So expand on that. That's interesting. Just expand on a little bit. So spiritual
yes.
aspects, love up to, and so to show more compassion.
Yes, definitely. For example, I mean, we know about, obviously, regular IQ, which deals with you know, maybe mathematical, verbal skills. Emotional IQ deals with relational aspects, managing emotions. But spiritual or love IQ, love Q, deals with, you know, love is an energy source. So, for example, compassion, wanting to relieve the suffering of your partner. empathy. Maybe they get home and you sense they're tired. So you say, honey, I've just made you a nice hot tub. I can sense you're already tired for today. So that's demonstrating empathy. That's a high level relational trait, to have empathy for someone. Another one is gratitude. Your research shows that people who are grateful have 40% better sleep and 30% less depression. People that keep a gratitude journal, for example, write 3 things you're grateful for every day, actually can improve their well-being and their optimism by doing that. So those are traits that, you know, you might even look for in a partner, in a mate, as well as, you know, develop within yourself, these kind of higher level psychological or spiritual traits.
I think that's a good idea. I know a number of my clients have gotten in the habit of keeping a gratitude journal.
Yes.
So that they, at the end of the day, they think of 3 things and write them down that they're grateful for. 3 things that happened to them that day that they appreciate, that they're grateful.
Yes, definitely. I think that's a great thing. For example, what are you grateful for today? Let's say if I were to ask you 3 things, what would you say?
Well, I'm not feeling very well, so this
okay. All right. Well, we're here. I mean, you and I are here, so that could be cool, right? That we can say.
No. In general, I am so grateful that I'm well married, happily married, that I have healthy children and grandchildren, and that my practice is thriving a little more than I almost like as I get older. I'm trying to cut back a little bit.
Right.
But no, every day I say a very short prayer.
Yes.
Every day. Mm. And that is, thank you, God, for all of my blessings.
Definitely. Yeah, because I wrote the new book I wrote last year, The 3 Secrets of Happiness, is kind of like a modern-day fable, kind of in the line of Paulo Coelho, the alchemist, which you may have heard about, where this pompous psychiatrist goes up to the mountain looking for the secrets of happiness, and he meets a mystic monk named Tanaka, who kind of breaks down his ego and teaches him the 3 secrets. And the 3 secrets are very simple. They are gratitude, joyful optimism, and love. The 3 elements, you know, it's not really based on money or other things like that or external things. It's really these internal traits that correlate with happiness. And the idea of gratefulness is extremely powerful. Yes.
Optimism. And what else?
Okay, yeah. So gratitude, joyful optimism, and forgiveness.
Forgiveness is so important.
And forgiveness
is an inside job for sure.
Yeah, not just forgiveness of others, but forgiveness of yourself, because we tend to be so hard on ourselves. We have a lot of regrets sometimes. You know, past relationships, past financial career things or family issues. So being able to forgive yourself liberates you from the past, from the regret. And it kind of puts you in a different mindset. So the way it works is that forgiveness deals with your past. Gratitude deals with your present. The fact that you're feeling grateful for everything you have right now. You're in the moment. You're in the present. And then optimism deals with your future. Like, you expect the best in the future. You have faith and hope that things are going to be well. So those are the 3 timelines that these 3 secrets can help you with.
So gratitude, you're in the moment. Joyful optimism, you're thinking about the future. And forgiveness has to do with the past.
Yes, definitely.
People generally are much healthier if they don't carry a lot of judgment and criticism about how they've been wronged in the past.
Definitely. They have resentments and things like that, you know, people hold on to for a long time. You know, my ex-wife and husband did this, and look at this, what they did to my life. And, you know, so unfortunately that hurts them in future relationships. They may become a little cynical or even bitter about males or females, you know, in relationships. So being able to start fresh, you know, to say, that's the past. You know, the baggage has been taken away. You know, I left the baggage behind. And now I'm starting to start fresh. I remember, like, in summer, I was on a trip with my son. He was looking at pro basketball, and we went out to some tryouts. So we're in a city, and they lost my luggage to the airlines. And but they said, hey, we can compensate you. You know, you go out and buy some suits, we'll pay you back. So, okay, that's kind of cool. So I lost my luggage. Eventually, I got it back. But then I bought a couple of nice suits, and they paid for it. So it's almost like by getting rid of the old, I got some new things. So that's a new idea. So getting rid of the old baggage, and then, you know, you get something new. So brand new clothes.
Yeah, speaking of baggage, I remember back when I was doing online dating after my husband died. And so I did it, not in Hawaii where we lived, but then a couple of years later in Los Angeles, I did it, eHarmony and Match.com. And then when I came to Seattle almost 10 years ago, the same thing, eHarmony and Match.com.
Right.
So I was thinking during the time I did online dating that I really wanted I didn't want a man, and in these older, you know, 50 plus, you do sometimes get people with a lot of baggage. And
yes.
I would say, you know, I want somebody who just has a carry-on.
Okay, a little, I like that, a little carry-on baggage.
Yeah, that you can put in the overhead bin.
Oh, okay, that's pretty cool.
Not a huge, big piece of luggage.
Yes, exactly, exactly. That's a good way to look at it. So you apparently found someone with a little baggage, not a big one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty hard. I mean, if people haven't done the work,
yes,
it's pretty hard when you're over 50 to not have baggage. You know, resentments that have grown through the years and things that people probably need to work out with therapy or self-help books or both.
Yes.
You know, if they're finding that they're discontent.
I think so. Even podcasts nowadays, or YouTube videos, or you know, coaching, anything that can help you, you know, improve yourself and transform, and basically forgive yourself. Again, the idea of forgiveness is often easier to forgive others sometimes than to forgive ourselves for real or imagined mistakes. So I say regret is like a rope that ties you to the past. So we need to cut that rope. And when you do that, your past all of a sudden changes. Now you see things differently because you only acted as well as you could have. Let's say you're in fifth grade. You can only act like a fifth grader when you're in fifth grade. But when you're in college, then you can act like a college student. You know, you're in a much higher level of knowledge. So there's no real need to regret. You know, you did the best you could at the time based on your grade level of knowledge and wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the key, to kind of see yourself and you know, give yourself that self-compassion, that self-love. And then, you know, grow and learn from, you know, any mistakes that may have been made and improve yourself and better relationships. So that's the idea, to keep moving forward with positivity.
Yeah, you say very eloquently, regret is a rope that ties you to the past.
Yes.
So many people get toward the end of their life and they have all these regrets.
Uh-huh.
It's really sad.
Yeah, that's the deathbed lament. You know the Elvis song, I Did It My Way, which is cool, but what if you said, I didn't do it my way? I did it everyone else's way, or I didn't, you know, follow my true dreams. That's the sad part of things. So
yeah.
So as long as we're alive, I mean, right now we have the privilege of being alive. They said that over 100 billion people have died throughout history, and there are 7 billion alive right now. So that means we're like part of the 7% club. We're the 7% that are currently alive. So that's an amazing idea. You know, we're part of the special club where we have this amazing experience of being here. And then, you know, at some point we're not going to be here, and then there'll be other people that will take over. So we really can really appreciate and be grateful for what we have and really actualize our dreams. That's the idea.
That's actualize.
Yes.
Actualize our dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So say a little more, because we were starting to talk about the security seeker, the SJ, and
yes,
the excitement seeker.
Uh-huh.
And talk maybe a little bit more about both of those types.
Okay.
You say the security seeker is 43.1% of the male population,
yes,
and the excitement seeker is 28.6% of the male population.
Exactly. Now, see how we're intuitive? We went off on a couple of tangents. You know, we're kind of like flowing with our thoughts.
Which yeah, is kind of, right.
That's what we do. Now, for the security seekers, they're the majority of the population, both male and female. They're the the rock solid people in society, the dependable people, the hard workers, people behind the scenes, administrators, organizers, people that, you know, help to keep everything running on time. And they're essential. You know, they're the perfect mom. They're the perfect dad, the caretakers. They're the traditional people. And, you know, they're very organized and the kind of traditional in many ways, family oriented. But they don't like a lot of unpredictability or insecurity. They like to know what's going on. So they don't like surprises that much. So if you have a partner who's that way, and you want to surprise them, they might get a little upset. Say, hey, I'd rather know in advance. Tell me what to do, what to wear, where we're going to go. So they have a whole different mindset. And then the excitement seekers, the sensing perceivers, SPs, which we call practical and spontaneous, they like to do things spur of the moment. They say, hey, I just got you tickets to Hawaii. I told your boss you're sick for a week. And the security seeker, what are you talking about? I'm going to lose my job. Are you crazy? Because they don't expect that, the security seekers. So what happened if I told you that? Okay, you're sick for a week. I told your boss. What would the security seeker say, do you think, to the excitement seeker?
So I didn't. Did you ask me a question?
Put yourself in that point of view. Are you spontaneous? Are you more structured, I think? We were talking about this earlier.
Oh, I'm more spontaneous.
Okay, so you might be the one that takes off to Hawaii, yeah? And says, let's go.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But then your partner will say, hey, you know, we got responsibilities here. We got to plan this out. So there can be an issue sometimes in relationships where the spontaneous person wants to do things spur of the moment, and the other person wants to have a more secure kind of scheduling part of it. So that could be an issue.
Spontaneous types often feel burdened by too much planning.
Exactly.
You know, they feel that last-minute decisions are more fun, and they fear that if they plan too much, they may end up missing valuable and enjoyable experiences.
Yeah, I'm a spontaneous person myself, so it's like we always want to have options. You know, we want to say, well, what if we do this and what if we do that? And we're the kind of people that like to juggle like three or four different things at one time. And sometimes we're late, and sometimes we're not exceptionally organized as a result. And the structured people will get on our case and says, "Come on, what's wrong with you? Be organized. You know, focus on one thing." But we say, "Hey, we're having fun. We like to do it this way." And, but you know, there's a value in both. The structured people often can get things done. You know, they're very good at practical, you know, organizing things. So we need those individuals, and they need us too. They need our fun-loving, spontaneous natures.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it is kind of a balance.
The organizing types are, in Myers-Briggs, organizing would be the judging.
Yeah, the J, the judging.
Spontaneous would be the perceiving.
Right. So think of a judge who's very straightforward. You know, this is the law. This is what you got to do. That's the judging personality. And they like structure, stability, organization. And the perceiver is the person who's like, go with the flow. Hey, let's take off and let's do this. And let's, you know, try different things. Let's experiment and be spontaneous. So that's a whole different mindset.
Yeah, I think that the judging or organized person believe that life is something they should control. And perhaps the more spontaneous types feel that life is something to be experienced and understood.
Yes, definitely.
In a nutshell.
Definitely. And again, sometimes you get this fairly commonly in relationships where you have the structured person with the spontaneous person. And if they don't respect each other, they have a war. Their household is a war. One person is kind of messy, the other person is organized, one person is late, the other person is on time. So they often criticize each other. They say, you know, you're irresponsible, you're not... you know, doing the right things, says the structure to the spontaneous. And the spontaneous person will say to the structured, and what's about you? Why are you such a, you know, stick in the mud or, you know, the anal retentive style, you know? Why are you so tight in your personality? You know, relax and enjoy. Enjoy life. So that can be an issue if they don't respect each other's style.
Yeah, I've seen it. Some of the couples I've counseled where, so he's an organizing type and he's quite happy to organize his wife as well. And she's a more spontaneous type and sometimes accuses him of trying to plan her life for her, and she doesn't like that.
Yeah, it even gets to the extreme of even in sex, there are people that like to schedule their lovemaking. And actually, there's one guy who's an executive. He had a premarital agreement where he wrote down, henceforth, after marriage, we shall have sex 3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, between 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And she signed the agreement because she was structured too. So they actually like having their window of a personal time when they can do that after the kids are asleep and the chores are done. But not everyone would go for that. Obviously, that's a very structured style.
I mean, you know, specializing in therapy as I do, I would say that you do need to put sex on the calendar. You know, I talk about the DINS syndrome, which is double income sex, and the TEFS syndrome, which is too tired for sex.
Yes.
And both of them get in the way, so put sex on the calendar.
Right.
But as the relationship goes on, there are all sorts of things that can happen where somehow the couple is losing the spark.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, that would be for a mature relationship. But I mean, if you have a natural spontaneous style in lovemaking, you know, you enjoy that. Maybe your partner has the same style. So, you know, they're more experimental. They try different positions and different things. So again, it's based on your type. You know, everyone has a certain style that they're comfortable with. And also how to respect your partner. Maybe you're compatible in many areas, but this is the one area, the structured and spontaneous, where you have a difference. So you can learn how to appreciate the spontaneous person as being more fun-loving and experimental, and the other person as being more organized and helping you get to work on time and then, you know, make sure you take care of the vacation the way it should be.
Yeah, all of that makes sense. Yeah, because the spontaneous type is going to feel too... So if the other one is between the planning, they may feel burdened by too much planning, and yet there are certain areas where you need to plan and make reservations and do this and that.
Of course, you know, and make sure you make your payments on time and make sure, you know, everything's done well in the way it should be. So that could be, you know, definitely, it could be complementary. There are times when you can complement each other, you know, one has a weakness in one area, one has a strength in the other. But again, the key is respect, because if you don't respect each other, then you get into the criticism, the attacks and things like that. And you may have heard of Gottman's research on marriage, where people that have harsh verbal and nonverbal reactions to their spouse, that predicts divorce many times. You know, those small little gestures and, you know, the resentment and things like that eventually can erode a marriage. And that can happen eventually.
Now, Gottman, John Gottman, in this Pacific Northwest area, and done over 40 years of research, and it's impressive.
Yes.
So he can predict a divorce with 90% accuracy, generally speaking.
By videotaping people and see their nonverbal expressions and even, you know, subtle things that you may not even see. And people can determine that. You know, the hostility, resentment. And eventually, that criticism of that person in a personal way. You know, you're no good. You know, why do you keep doing this? You know, you're disorganized or you're too, stick in the mud. You know, you can't really enjoy life.
Well, the problem with that, John Gottman has identified how criticism can lead to contempt.
Yes.
And contempt is sometimes people who've been together a long time get into that. And it's really sad because people that have contempt often are hitting below the emotional belt line.
Right. Yeah, so contempt sounds like almost like hatred in a way, which is kind of a horrible word to think about, you know, if you hate somebody.
Yeah, for sure.
The guy types his idea of, first finding out who you are, loving yourself, and then attracting someone who resonates with your style, who's compatible. And then finally respecting that, there may be some differences, but respecting each other's differences and embracing them as something that can be a positive, complement to your marriage, to your relationship.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit more, Dr. Alex, about your workshops. I really like the idea that you do these role plays. The rich person versus the homeless, and then you have them switch roles.
Yes.
Because, the Native American Indians would say that you have to walk 20 miles in someone else's moccasins before you can understand them. So I think that role plays do, and you also do the extrovert and the introvert and switch, can help with empathy and compassion for the other. Your style is different, but it's valuable still.
Definitely so. You may have heard of Moreno's psychodrama, where he would do therapy, and people would basically mirror each other. They would do what's called doubles. And you would basically get into the mindset of maybe your dad who abused you, or your mom who was mean to you. And it can be very cathartic. It can be a lot of emotional expression. When you realize, they had their limitations. They suffered as well by their unkindness, perhaps. So I like to say that, people suffer from their own personality or they're rewarded by their own personality. The person who's yelling at you and so aggressive and critical, they're suffering from maybe high blood pressure, or their heart rate increases, their face is turning red. So they're also suffering from their own negativity. So we have to, and when we do that, we lose fear and anger toward the person. We start to have even some compassion for that mean-spirited person, is also suffering under the weight of their negativity. So it's a whole different way to look at the things that happen to you.
Well, and that's an example of being more compassionate with yourself. Being more compassionate with yourself because you came out of maybe a family of origin where you were exposed to all these things. And do you know where I'm going with
this? Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, instead of blaming yourself or feeling bad about your circumstance, you can say, under the circumstance, I learned from this, and they also suffered under their own negativity. So I want to be a positive person. So I call that the reverse lesson, learn the opposite. So from the unkind person, learn kindness. From the impatient person, learn patience. From the mean-spirited person, learn compassion. Because you learn the reverse lesson. You take what they had and you twist it around. And for your own good, for your own growth, you do the reverse.
Right. That can, and so then you end up being more compatible because you're learning from each other. And we do have these mirror neurons in our brains, where we become more like the other person over time. So you want to make sure that the other person is a good person, where you can really learn.
Yes.
Like, if we go back to the types, if you have intuition plus feeling, these individuals tend to be warm and sympathetic people who enjoy using their qualities of enthusiasm and insight.
Yes.
Intuition plus feeling types tend to be, more comfortable. And they feel where they can understand and communicate with others. So that might be behavioral sciences, research, art, literature, writing, teaching.
Exactly. And then the, you know, the intuitive thinkers or the knowledge seekers are great at science, like technology, business, those kind of things, where they can apply their intellect and analytical abilities to create something new, something innovative. You know, our inventions, you know, the internet, you know, the cell phones, all these new things are coming out, are you know, coming from the intuitive thinkers, you know, the knowledge seekers, all the great things that are being developed. You know, mission to Mars, those kind of things.
Right. So the intuition plus thinking, these are logical people that enjoy analyzing, forecasting, and developing theoretical possibilities.
Definitely. And then for marketing, we need the sensing perceivers. We need the wheeler dealers, you know, the excitement seekers, those that can sell ice to Eskimos. They're great marketers and persuaders and promoters. So they're the ones that get our ideas out there and able to express it. And then finally, we need the security seekers, the sensing judges, to make sure we have administrative backup. You know, we have our office running properly. We have all the bills paid. We have all the logistics. So we need pretty much everyone. This is like a team. I call it the love type team or the love team. You know, all of us together can do great things in the world if we pool our talents, our special abilities.
Yes, you say that your ultimate mission is to help the world transform pain into power and teach humanity the power of love.
Yes.
And that's a bold mission, but it's necessary.
Actually, I'm working on a new book called Invincible You, and discover your inner power and achieve your heart's desires. So it actually blends Western and Eastern psychology and philosophy together. And that's the idea, to transform pain into power and bring love as a, more than a romantic idea, but as an actual spiritual energy, a psychological energy that can help you grow and actualize yourself. So that's the mission. And the other thing I want to mention is you're asking me about workshops. I have this really interesting event for singles called the Dating Masquerade.
And yeah, we talked a little bit off the air about that. Tell our listeners in the time we have left what that involves, the dating masquerade.
Yeah, basically it's people have on masks with different colors based on their guy type or love type. You know, green, for example, for meaning seekers, blue for excitement seekers. And then they mingle, interact based on a couple of fun icebreakers. And at the end of the night, the masks come off. And then they determine their compatibility based on, you know, all night talking to these individuals based on their type. So instead of Cinderella, we call it Typerella. A new way to meet people from the inside out. You know, so we call it depth dating. Instead of, you've heard of speed dating, but this is based on depth of personality. So it's a whole new approach. It's been successful. We've done it out here in different areas in Southern California. So if your listeners are interested, they can definitely contact me and we can you know, get them on the list.
Good. So, but they need to be in Southern California area.
I may do other areas. So wherever they are, they can let me know and I can organize something perhaps for them as well. Well, that was a lot of fun. Diana really asked some good questions. And, you know, she's one of the leading authorities on sex and love over the age of 40. So I think we're going to help a lot of people with the show. And again, on Love University, if you have any questions or comments, if you want to be on the show, if you want to send us any of your ideas or issues, you can write to us at lovetype4u@AOL.com. That's LOVETYPE, the number 4, letter U, at AOL.com. Our website is loveuniversity.love. And you can call us at 310-226-8090. So until next time, put away your pens, notepads, iPads, and we'll see you next time.